Pep Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to a Saturday Buckeye Talk. Doug Lee-Maurice here to talk gambling, because guess what, man? You're going to be able to gamble in Ohio on this stuff next season. So we are going to talk a little bit now about why Nathan, Steven, and I were so terrible with our advice on the Buckeyes this year. And to do that, we bring in the fourth member of Buckeye Talk, Tyler Shoemaker, odds maker extraordinaire. T-Shoe, this is mostly going to be a podcast of excuses because I just totaled it up this year with the picks that Nathan, Steven, and I made against the spread for Ohio State. Nathan and I were 3-8-1, and Steven was 4-7-1. The over-unders, Nathan was 3-8-1, Steven was 4-7-1, I was 5-6-1. The totals, Nathan 6-16-2, Steven and I 8-14-2. And so I just want to talk about how everybody was wrong about Ohio State every week this year, right? Teach you, or are you lying on a bed of money?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but so I tallied it up. I was 6-4-2 against the spread betting picking Ohio State games. I didn't bet them all. In fact, I rarely bet them at all this year. And then on totals, I was 7-5. So pretty good. I mean, over 500, so I'll take it. But to your point, it was difficult, especially as the season went on, because it's kind of the old saying, the more you learn, you realize you know nothing. It was kind of like that, where they show up against Michigan State and the offense is clicking on all cylinders and they look great and the defense pitches a shutout basically, and then they turn right around and play that game against Michigan. So it was very back and forth. So I'm honestly a little surprised that my numbers came out that well with a team, especially with their issues being a lot in the red zone. You know, red zone is where totals and sides can be made or broken, because, you know, 3 versus 7, when you get in there, that's a big difference when you're talking about betting. So obviously, I mean, there was some luck there for sure.
What a team like Ohio State, and this certainly applies to this year, but applies to Ohio State every year. Is it harder or easier to bet a big time college program who typically is favored often by a lot? Like compared to, like, for instance, NFL bets, where there's so much parity, man, if you're favored by more than a touchdown in the NFL, sometimes that's a big deal. Ohio State is often favored by, you know, more than 20 points. I know I got this thing from bookies.com that was the Big Ten records against the spread this year. By their numbers, Ohio State was 6-5-1. Like, if you're trying to really analyze, if you're trying to just make money, right? If you're just trying to throw some money on your favorite team, because that makes sports maybe a little more fun for some people, then do what you want to do. Just don't do it too much. But if you're actually trying to make money, do you lean on big time college favorites, or do you stay away from big time college favorites? Or is it all about just finding the right moment and following your numbers and doing what they tell you?
Well, it definitely, you know, every decision I make does start with the number, but I think it's less so about how big they're favored, more so than it is the teams that are favored by that much. You know, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, those teams, they're always on national TV. So they're always in marquee games, which is going to generally attract more action. So the lines generally in those games are more efficient. So it's a little bit harder to find an edge in those games. So that's why, you know, you hear me say, I don't bet Ohio State a lot. Part of that is, you know, just, I don't want there to be any blind spots from, you know, just from my fandom. But the other side of that is from a number standpoint, a lot of times their numbers are just too efficient.
Because the more action, it's just like anything. Like if you're taking a survey of people, if you survey 50 people, you might not get a great, accurate view of things. If you survey 10,000 people, you have a better chance of getting a full view. That applies to betting as well. It evens out the number.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if you're looking at like a Marshall versus Middle Tennessee State game, you may have like 2,000 or 3,000 bets on it. But if you're talking about an Ohio State Michigan State game or something, there may be 16,000 bets on it. So that line just getting hammered, you know, more and more to what it truly should be.
Do you like, I know, like, for instance, sometimes, I guess this is how life works. This is how gambling works. It's like you see something initially and you're like, oh, I don't know. And then after the fact, it's like, well, of course that happened. Like Bama as an underdog against Georgia in the SEC title game. It's like Nick Saban was like, ha ha ha, thanks for making us an underdog. And it's like, my God, you could have built a new house betting on Bama as an underdog. They hadn't been an underdog in 5 years. Sometimes you see things after the fact and it's like, well, you know, of course I would have done that. Like, do you look for those? Do you try to seize on moments where like a big time program is an underdog for a rare moment? Not that Ohio State, I don't think was an underdog. Were they an underdog at all this year? I don't think they were.
No.
So like you couldn't seize on that with Ohio State, but how do you view that? The moments when Ohio State or like that when Bama is an underdog?
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, going back to last year when Ohio State was an underdog against Clemson, like I was all over that because like you said, those big time programs don't get to play the underdog card very often. So when they do, I think the players really buy in. And that's, spoiler alert, Clemson's one of my best bets this bowl season because they're a 1.5-point dog to Iowa State. And I think it's going to be a similar situation where Dabo finally is going to be able to play the underdog card and it be true. So I like the spot that they're in. But yeah, absolutely, that's something I would look for.
Was the Ohio State offense, and you listen to the podcast, so you know we went back and forth on this year of, okay, are we actually analyzing this game or is the Ohio State offense so good like nothing else matters? And there were a couple weeks where the Ohio State offense was so good nothing else mattered. And then there were some weeks like against Nebraska or against Michigan where it was like, well, no, that was not the case. They did not score a touchdown every time they had the ball. When Ohio State's offense is like that, right? Like, how did you view the Ohio State offense this year, both as a fan, just as a football watcher, and also as someone who's trying to analyze the Buckeyes from a betting standpoint?
Yeah, like I said, it was really difficult, mostly just because the red zone inconsistency just made it really difficult to get a grasp on from a betting standpoint of what they were going to look like. Because if they, like, for instance, in the Michigan game, they come out, you know, the big talking point from fans and media was, well, they're just throwing the ball way too much in these tight games. So then they come out against Michigan, first drive of the second half, and it's run, 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 punt, because they couldn't get anything on the ground. So the inconsistency of the run game and in the red zone in particular, I think, made it really difficult to get a gauge on the offense this year.
Okay. Do you ever, is this ever a gambling strategy? Just pick a team and like ride with the team on one side of the spread all year. Like say, I'm going to take Michigan every game, or I'm going to bet against Northwestern every game, right? Because I just think maybe they're misvalued. I just think they are much better or much worse than the general Vegas view of them. And if I just hit that every week, I'm going to end up winning more than I lose. Is that ever a strategy that gamblers do?
It's not. And it's hard because like you look in hindsight and it's like, okay, well, Michigan was 11-2 against the spread this year. Great. But in real time, you know, week to week, as those games are happening, as someone who studies this a lot, I would have a hard time doing that. Now, I may say, okay, Michigan's been undervalued for two or three straight weeks now. Maybe the odds makers don't have a grasp on them. Let me see what my number says. And if my number says, yes, they're still being undervalued, then it's like, okay, now I'm gonna bet them because the trajectory shows and my number, you know, when they're in agreement, that's a bet for me. But I wouldn't blindly do it because in my mind, eventually the odds makers are going to catch up. And it you have to look at gambling like buying stocks. And, you know, if you're buying Bitcoin now, as opposed to 3 years ago or whatever, you're late to the party and you're not getting the value that you were getting 3 years ago. So that's kind of how I look at it. So a team like that, it would be difficult to just blindly say, I'm going to ride with them no matter what.
Do you want to explain Bitcoin to me? Do you know what it is?
I don't, my wife is all about it. I'm not really a crypto guy. I spend way too many hours doing this. I don't have enough time to study crypto also.
The Shoemaker household, sometime like I'm going to send you a text and it's going to be answered by your butler. And it's going to be like, Tyler is not available right now. Your wife's in Bitcoin. You've got the gambling figured out. You guys are going to be buying properties. So, because I'm looking at this thing from, again, bookies.com. And like you can see of the 14 teams in the Big Ten, let's see, 9 of them finished between 7-4-1 and 6-6 against the spread, right? Which is nobody's, if you did what I just said, hey, I just bet on them every week. Nobody's getting insanely rich off of any of that. But you look at the teams that were sort of like, okay, there was actually like a trend to their seasons. And again, they kind of make sense the regular season. As you said, 11-2 when you had the Big Ten championship game. Michigan 10-2 against the spread. Michigan State 8-4 against the spread. Those are two teams that had like lousy seasons last year that it probably just took the general populace a long time to catch up on how good they actually were. And they both won double-digit games. Meanwhile, Maryland 4-8 against the spread, Northwestern 3-9, and Indiana 2-10. Northwestern's a team that won the Big Ten West last year. Indiana was like the darling of the Big Ten going into this year and had an absolutely awful year. And people were probably slow to catch up to actually how bad those teams were. Is that how it usually works? Like that? Do preseason opinions really truly sort of influence how people bet teams throughout the course of the year, that you're still betting Indiana in week 10 being like, oh, no, I think they'll turn it around. They feel like a great value here. I can't believe I'm getting Indiana plus 11. It's like Indiana stinks by now, man. Indiana stinks.
Yeah, I was just having this conversation with someone the other day, and I do understand why preseason projections weigh into a team's power rating, obviously, particularly early in the season. That makes sense. But even like Bill Connolly, I've seen him tweet that like SP Plus is designed to slowly react to what he calls trends, but what I would call is actual performance-based results. So that's why you got a team like Clemson started off the season 0-7 against the spread, because their preseason projection is, you know, that they're a top three team in college football, and they weren't that. You know, I think they got it together towards the end, but yeah, I think there are people that, because the college football season is just so few data points with, you know, with only 12 games in the regular season, people will still really rely on those preseason projections. And I mean, you look at a team like North Carolina, who some people were picking to go to the playoff or at least compete for the ACC. And like, I don't know what their ATS record was, but it couldn't have been good because I felt like they were overvalued most of the season. In fact, I was their week one game against Virginia Tech. I was on them, and that was kind of my sticking my neck out there, best bet of the week. Like, everyone's on North Carolina, I'm on Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech won the game outright.
And then their coach got fired by the end of the year, but they were better than North Carolina on
yeah.
on that day. Let's talk. I'm back towards Ohio State a little bit more here before we're going to do some bowl picks. And then again, just talk about in general, if you live in Ohio, and I know a lot of people listening don't live in Ohio, but maybe you already have sports betting in your state. Just a little bit about like, hey, if you're thinking about doing this, maybe here's some little bit of advice, but we do want to get some bowl picks. The Rose Bowl. Ohio State opened as a 7-point favorite. It's at 6.5 right now, 66-point over under. When you get into bowl stuff, and again, you know Ohio State really well. We're trying to figure out, is Garrett Wilson going to play? Is Nicholas Petit-Frere going to play? Those seem to be the two main guys maybe that are up in the air. Does motivation factor into how you try to analyze this from a betting standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. The bowl season is really difficult, you know, for someone like me that relies so heavily on the numbers and the data based on what you've done, because kind of what you've done doesn't necessarily matter, you know, 100% going into a bowl game, because you look at a team like Utah, who, I mean, this is their dream scenario, is to go to the Rose Bowl and play the Big Ten, you know, the marquee brand of the Big Ten. Whereas Ohio State had national championship aspirations 2 weeks ago, and now those are gone. And like you said, now we don't know who's going to play and who's not. So like my number on this game, I made it Ohio State minus 10, but I'm not betting it. I'm not betting the side. I don't feel good about it. In fact, I've told a couple people, like, I'm not sure we're going to win the game, because motivation is just such a huge factor in a matchup like this, where Utah's not a sexy brand. So I don't know how jacked up Ohio State's going to be to play in this game. And this is Utah's Super Bowl. So I don't like that from an Ohio State standpoint.
I do believe in getting on site at the bowl game and trying to get a feel for how things are. You get to talk to people on both sides. You just sort of get a feel of like, well, who, you know, you get glances at practice, who looks like they're kind of taking it seriously, who looks sort of bored, who looks like they're just looking at palm trees. I believe in that for bowl games to some extent. We're not at that point yet. So we'll gather more information and we'll talk about that more on Buckeye Talk as we get closer to the game. What do your numbers say about Utah? Like, how good of a team, if it's the true Utah team, are they like a top 15 team in your mind? Are they a top 40 team? Like, how much respect do you have for them sort of as a football team based on what they've done this year?
Yeah, they, I mean, like I said, I project this game at 10 points. I'm looking here at my power ratings to see. But yeah, they're about a top 15-ish team for me. So, I mean, they're – but the problem, too, is like we talked about the preseason projections weighing into that. Utah, since they got away from Charlie Brewer and went to the guy that's starting now, his name escapes me, but they've been excellent with him at quarterback. Yeah. And they've been a totally different team. And, I mean, they manhandled Oregon twice. You know, so I – and the way they play – to me, they're kind of just Michigan West, and that obviously is a concern for Ohio State coming off of what was a terrible Michigan game. So, yeah. I as an Ohio State fan, I hope the fan base at large and the team, obviously, like I hope they have a healthy respect for what Utah is, because it's not a huge marquee brand, but I do think they're a very good football team.
Let me just talk to Tyler Shoemaker, just the Ohio State fan, for a second here. How did you feel when you watched the Michigan game? Were you in shock? Were you mad? Were you sad? Were you like, those are the Ohio State vulnerabilities coming home to roost? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, well, I was cold for one because I was in the big house freezing my butt off.
That's right.
to be sitting there getting snowed on and watch your team getting the ball ran down their throat wasn't a great feeling. But yeah, it was because I was at the Oregon game too. So fair disclosure, I won't be going to a game next year. it felt like being at the Oregon game all over again, where we just didn't have an answer defensively and the offense was fine, but not otherworldly. And it needed to be otherworldly in that game to have a chance with the way the defense was playing. So
yeah,
particularly in the second half, you know, the defense did get a couple stops in the first half, which I know you've pointed out. But at halftime, I kind of felt like both teams should feel pretty good right now. Like Michigan's up one, so I'm sure they would take that. We're down one and have played like crap. And then we're getting the ball, like we're fine. And then it's three and out. Michigan comes down, scores. And then I looked at my buddy that I was at the game with, and I was like, that's it. I don't know that we're coming back.
I would love to still know that third and two play call to open the second half, where they basically leave Josh Ross unblocked to tackle Trayvon Henderson is among the more befuddling plays. Like, what did you get a different look defensively than you thought you were getting? Did you have the wrong blocking scheme in there? Did somebody do something wrong, or did you just get out chess matched there? Because to have your third and two play be their best linebacker is just meeting your freshman running back in the backfield, it's like, well, that, how can that be the thing? How can that be the thing? It's more one of the most stunning things you'll see. Okay. I do want to talk about, though, the other side of that game, which will lead us into a little bit of some of the bowl stuff and the semifinal stuff. We'll do that next on Buckeye Talk. All right. Doug LaMaurice back with our guy, Tyler Shoemaker. I've said this on this podcast multiple times. I was talking, you know, to people at Ohio State the other day, and I was saying, it's like, I think Michigan's good. Like, I think that should make Ohio State feel better in my mind, that like you lost to a good team on the road in bad weather when a couple of your guys were sick, whatever, but it's like Michigan, the bottom line is you lost to a good team. I think Michigan absolutely deserves to be in the playoff. I think Michigan can hang with Georgia. Like, I don't think this is not a fraud. This is, to me, this is not like even losing to Michigan State in 2015, and then Michigan State goes to the playoff and shows like, well, they're not good enough to be here, right? That this is the Michigan team, of course, doesn't have as much talent as Ohio State, but they have some real talent at some really important spots. And by the way, they have like one of the two best defensive players in college football is going to be a top five pick, and he changed the game. What do you think of Michigan? And then we'll talk about what that means for the Michigan-Georgia game, but what's your view of them?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you just said. I think this year was kind of the perfect storm of, you know, Michigan had a lot of seniors. You know, Hassan Haskins had an excellent game. Aiden Hutchinson obviously had an excellent game. And pretty much all of Ohio State's best players with the – maybe not best, that's probably the wrong way to say it, but a lot of Ohio State's key contributors are freshmen and sophomores. And when you get a bunch of freshmen and sophomores against a bunch of seniors who have never beaten Ohio State, you know, I just think that was the perfect storm. I think Michigan has enough talent, obviously, you know, that they could come in and they had a great game plan on both sides of the ball. And I mean, credit them for getting it done. I don't think Ohio State has anything to, you know, hang their head about. Like you said, it's not the 2015 Michigan State game or the Virginia Tech game in 2014 or anything like that. I just think you tip your cap and go to next year. And I, from an Ohio State perspective, with the way they've recruited and with the way the young guys have developed, I would be optimistic going into next year. Like, I don't think, if the question is, did this year change the trajectory of the rivalry? I don't think that's the case.
So on the College Football Survivor show that I co-host with Shahan Jeharaja, we last Wednesday did a full hour-long breakdown of Alabama-Cincinnati, that game where we thought each team had an edge, that kind of stuff. We're going to do it this coming Wednesday for Michigan-Georgia. So I have not completely – I didn't dive in yet on the Michigan-Georgia side of things. But the reason that we did Michigan-Georgia second is because I'm still waiting for Georgia to bench Stetson Bennett. And it's like, how can you evaluate a team if you don't know who their starting quarterback is going to be? But – you know, I think when you look at, we had so much respect for the Georgia defense, but Michigan has such an offensive identity. They have a cadre of backs who are real dudes. Their offensive line played very well against Ohio State. JJ McCarthy is a nice little wrinkle. And then you get to the other side of the ball, and it's like, I think Aiden Hutchinson can make life as difficult for the Georgia quarterback as he did for CJ Stroud. I think it's, what is it, like 8.5 or so, that line right now, Tyler. I don't know what I think of it, but I think Michigan will compete. So like, what is your general view of, from a betting standpoint or otherwise, of Michigan, Georgia, from what you've looked at so far?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think one, it just seems to me the mentality of this Michigan team, at least from the outside looking in, it seems different. They seem to have a different confidence about them this year. And I think it starts with Aiden Hutchinson, the way he kind of carries himself, not in a cocky way, but you can tell he just truly believes, like, I'm good enough to put the team on my back. And he was against Ohio State, and that's what he did. So I definitely think they can compete with Georgia. From a betting standpoint, my numbers make that 7. So not a ton of value, but I mean, if you're getting 7.5 or better, which right now it's 8.5, you know, and you want to bet that, Michigan would be my lean. But I'm probably not betting the side in that game. I do like the total. The total is 44.5, and I project that at 50.5. So I will be betting the over in that game.
Well, part of that too is, I mean, Georgia's offense. George Pickens played some snaps in the Alabama game. He's coming back a little bit. Again, Michigan kind of does what they do, even against that Georgia defense. I think Michigan will put a couple drives together. And then I think both defenses are also dynamic enough to create points that I think Aiden Hutchinson might create a touchdown. I think that Georgia back seven might get a pick six on Cade McNamara, who every now and then gets a little three quarters release there, throwing over the middle of the field. All of a sudden a safety stepping in front of a throw and running it back the other way. So that seems like a very logical bet to me as well. Now that you said it, I'm just going to agree with you because that makes me sound smart. Let's talk about the Alabama Cincinnati game. Then when Shahan and I broke that down, I really did just come around to the idea of, we were talking about who has the, what in what area does each team have the biggest edge? And I had an easier time pointing out Cincinnati's obvious advantages than I did Alabama's, other than saying like, well, maybe Will Anderson will just blow everything up and win the game by himself. And Bryce Young won the Heisman Trophy. I mean, I get all that stuff, but you look at Cincinnati's secondary, you look at the Alabama offensive line problems against the way that Cincinnati can get after the passer a little bit. And then I really respect Desmond Ridder and sort of being in control of a game like this. Again, that's much different than what Alabama did to Stetson Bennett. Desmond Ritter's not going to let that happen to him. This is a two score edge, right? That's the line on this. That just seems, yep. That seems a reputational line to me. That is, if you're giving Bama two scores, that's up highest upside, best of Bama versus group of five. And like, I don't think that's what this is, because Cincinnati is, as when you go through their talent, right, individually, Sauce Gardner and Maje Sanders and Alec Pierce and Leonard Taylor and Josh Wiley and Desmond Ridder and Jerome Ford and Michael Young Jr. Like, you go through a lot of guys, it's like, real dude, real dude, real dude, real dude, real dude. It's power five talent. Obviously, Luke didn't just spin this out of thin air. And then Bama's ceiling, they got to that ceiling against Georgia. They have not been near that ceiling very much this year.
No.
The team that barely beat Auburn, I mean, that's not a team that should be favored by 14 over Cincinnati. Do you like the Cincinnati side in this?
I do. And the Cincinnati plus 14 is going to be a best bet for me. I make this line 9.5. You know, I would understand if it was 10. To me, this is the books protecting themselves against the inevitable Bama betting surge that's always going to come. And even at this inflated number of 14, the last time I looked, Bama's getting over 80% of the bets and over 80% of the money. So, I mean, like, everybody in the world is on Alabama, which, you know how I feel about that. So that's like an auto bet for me for Cincinnati. To make a basketball analogy in this game, Alabama to me is like that AAU team that recruits from like a 250-mile radius and they've got a bunch of five stars, whereas Cincinnati just like this homegrown team, but they're well coached and they're all just really solid, really fundamental players that can come and kick your butt if you're not mentally ready. And to me, that's what this is. And I'll side with the team that's going to be mentally locked in and disciplined. And I mean, and like I was saying about Utah earlier, this is Cincinnati Super Bowl. I mean, they're wearing the weight of the entire group of five on their shoulders in this game. And if they come get blown out, the group of five will never sniff the playoff again. So I think I hope for Cincinnati's sake that Luke Fickell treats this game differently than he did the Ohio State game a couple of years ago, which I know you've pointed out a few times. You know, in trying to make it not a big deal, you end up, you know, psyching yourself out and just getting smoked. So I would hope he's learned from that and they'll come in much more mentally prepared for this game.
Yeah, they do. They are sort of a standard bearer for something. And it's like, do you rise to that occasion or do you allow that pressure to be a burden? And I think Luke learned a lot from what happened at Ohio Stadium in 2019. I think you saw the way they played right with Georgia in the bowl game last year, and that they, the last 2 years, have known they can't lose. They have to be perfect every week, and they've carried that, and they've survived for 2 years. So even though it's Tulane and Tulsa and Navy and Temple and South Florida and UCF and Houston and SMU, you still can't lose.
Yeah.
That is a mental burden, and they living through that and coming out the other side and getting this reward, I think they won't be weighed down by that. So I do really like the idea. Plus, I mean, if you live in Ohio, it's fun. Bet on Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of betting Cincinnati as a very reasonable pick in this game as well. What else stands out to you in bowl season? I think some people get super psyched for bowl season. I think is there a bowl going on right now?
Yeah. Middle Tennessee State and Toledo are playing right now.
That's I have never, you know, sometimes you do the ESPN bowl pick'em thing, whatever. That's fun. And you assign the weight. And like, I didn't do it this year. I like doing those things. But like the idea of like, oh, there's a college football game on. Oh, I can't believe it. It's like, for real? Toledo, Middle Tennessee State and some boondoggle and some place. I don't even know where it is. And some guys in checkered coats came and invited them to come play in their city. Like, are you actually excited by that? Sometimes I'm dumbfounded by that. The great matchup's great. And again, by the way, some of the great matchups already, Kenny Pickett not playing for Pitt, Kenneth Walker III not playing for Michigan State in that bowl matchup. We know that's going to happen. Anything that's not the playoff, you risk that. Again, my expectation is at least a couple of Ohio State guys won't play. Where are you landing right now on, Tissue's got his eye on this game?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, I am going to be on Clemson plus 1.5 against Iowa State. I basically project that game at a pick 'em, but this is one of those situations where Clemson is an underdog, and I trust Clemson more than I trust Iowa State in a big game like this. And the other side of this is this line is assuming Breece Hall plays for Iowa State. Hmm. I am not operating under that assumption. I mean, he may, and if he does, I still would take Clemson plus the points, but I think he's going to opt out, and I think the line's going to draw. I think Clemson's going to end up favored in this game. So I'm going to get the early value there on Clemson. And then I also, like I said, I like Cincinnati plus 14 against Alabama in the playoff. And then the Notre Dame-Oklahoma State game, I'm going to be on the over. I project that at 52.5, and the over-under is 45.5, so that's just a sheer value play for me. Those are really the three that I really like.
No Jim Knowles, man, right? I mean, he's not running the Oklahoma State defense for that game. And Marcus Freeman wants to come out and show people what he's all about. And Tommy Rees, the offensive coordinator, wants to start spinning some stuff, man. I think that's another good reason for your over to be a very reasonable pick there.
And then my last one I'll give out is Oklahoma minus 4.5 against Oregon. I know there's no Lincoln Riley. There's also no Mario Cristobal on the other side of that. In these types of games where coaches are gone, you look at what the motivation is, what are teams looking ahead for next year? And Caleb Williams still has a lot to prove. So I think he's good enough that if he just comes out and is like, I'm just going to go get this win, I think he's good enough to do that. So I definitely would be on Oklahoma. And I mean, Oregon had playoff aspirations again just a couple of weeks ago, and they've gotten just their teeth kicked in, you know, in two games against Utah. So I think they're kind of ending the season on a downward trend, whereas Oklahoma might be. I mean, I know they lost to Oklahoma State, but they're going to be trending up heading into next year with Brent Venables as the coach and Caleb Williams back at quarterback. So I like Oklahoma minus 4.5.
All right, so mark those down, people, in case you do this stuff. And when we come back, we'll finish up real quickly with what's coming and advice about if you maybe are going to start doing this stuff next on Buckeye Talk. All right, Doug Lamarie's back with Tyler Shoemaker. Tyler, but before I forget again, give the people your Twitter handle and then where else they can find your stuff. I know I was on that section. Is it section 11 or section 111?
Section 111.
Section 111 podcast that your brother does. I was on there with you guys a couple weeks ago. You were on there from time to time. What's the Twitter handle for the folks?
Yeah, definitely follow me at BuckeyeTie23. So, you know, any best bets that I make, I tweet out every single bet that I make, and any pertinent information that I come across, I generally will tweet that out too. So if you're into this sort of thing, hopefully get some good stuff from my Twitter.
All right. And I think maybe more people are going to start getting into it because the Ohio legislature, like, they're finally passing it. They're going to do it. We're going to have sports betting in Ohio for next football season. I mean, it'll start before that, I think, in 2022. But again, I'm from Pennsylvania originally. And so I've gone, you know, a couple times during the football season. I went back to see my mom and see some friends. And when I was there, I signed up for one of the online accounts in Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania's had this for a while, just to dork around Buckeye Talk, just because I wanted to see like how it worked. What's the app experience like? How much do you have to bet? What kind of things can you bet on? And the answer is, like, the app experience is super easy. You can bet on anything, and you can bet like a nickel. So, like, the other week when I was back home, it was at the low, low, lowest ebb of the Kansas City Chiefs, being like, people are like, I don't even know if they're going to make the playoffs. And they had bets on who will be the number one seed in the AFC. Not who's going to win the Super Bowl, just who will be the number one seed in the AFC playoffs. And the Chiefs were 50-1. And I was like, wow. Well, there's still the Chiefs. So I bet that. And now, like, they're like tied for the number one seed right now. And
there you go.
I kind of like my chances. Tyler Shoemaker, guess how much I bet at 50-1?
$5.
$1.
Hey, that's good ROI. That's okay.
One.
That's the name of the game.
$1 because you can bet $1, which that's the kind of person I am. So, I mean, I'm terrible, as we've seen there. We have definitive proof that I am terrible at this, but like just doing weird little stuff like that. I mean, it's not to bet $1 on a game so you can win $1. I mean, that doesn't make much sense, but to bet $1 on something at 50-1, I don't know. So like there's all kinds of opportunities and stuff like that to dork around. And there's a lot of future stuff. They have all kinds of different sports. I'm assuming the exact same kind of apps are going to come to Ohio that they have in Pennsylvania. You don't even need to go anywhere. You do it on your phone. You do it in your house. As long as you're in the state and you sign up with like a credit card and put $25 in, you can make 25 $1 bets on, you know, who's going to win the Wimbledon next year or whatever. I don't know if that's the best way to get rich and get the lake house next to Tyler Shoemaker and his Bitcoin wife. What I would not call myself a sports bettor, but if it's going to be legal in my state, I am a sports fan. I have $25, whatever. Would you have any advice for them on here's a good way to maybe enjoy yourself without throwing money off a cliff time after time after time? Are futures bets good? Are they dumb? Are you better off trying to take money lines in games where you maybe get less odds on a favorite, but you just have to win? You don't have to worry about point spreads. A lot of times, some of your best bets are over unders. Are sometimes those smarter bets than trying to pick? That's the style of a game rather than who's going to win it. What advice would you have for the sort of novice gambler who might decide to get a betting app on their phone?
Yeah, that's a good question. I personally don't really get into futures a whole lot. But if you are going to, I mean, my advice would be kind of what I said earlier, and that's, you know, to treat it kind of like a stock. And that's what you did with Kansas City, who, you know, at one point was a really hot stock, you know, quote unquote stock. You got them at their low point, you bought low, and you know, that might pay off 50-1 for you. So if you're going to bet futures, honestly, that's the way you would want to do it. In terms of single games, for beginning bettors, I think there's a lot of enticement to want to do like all these like crazy like teasers and parlays and like, you know, try to bet $50 to win $40,000 because that's what the Action Network tweets out all the time. But like the odds of doing that, you know, if you put a couple bucks on it, whatever, you know, it's probably worth it. But if you're going to do it like on a regular basis, I would really recommend sticking to single game bets. And you know, whether you like the side or the total, I would just have some sort of basis for your bet. And my personal take is to have some sort of number basis for that, because that's really what it comes down to, is the number. Because if you just say, okay, these two teams are playing, I like the over no matter what. Well, if that line gets driven up 6 points, you've lost a touchdown worth of value on that bet. Why would you still bet the over? You know, so just little things like that, I think would have helped me when I was starting out.
Is it okay if the system that you would come up with is just follow Tyler Shoemaker on Twitter and do what he says? That'd be a good system.
That's perfectly fine too. That's why I give out the information for free.
You can't be afraid to listen to smart people, right? That like the idea no, I don't want to listen to the experts. I want to go with my gut. And it's like, what are you doing? You are setting your money on fire, you idiot. So, I mean, it can be fun. It's here, man. And again, every now and then when we do a little bit of the gambling talk, sometimes we'll get texters who are like, I don't really care about that. And that's great. I mean, that's great. And some people just don't know much about it. You know, when it's in Ohio, we're just going to talk about it. I mean, you're going to hear people talk about it like during games and stuff and in network shows. And it's just going to become more of a fundamental part of sports. Now you can ignore it, right? Just like you can ignore analytics, or you can ignore if people are talking about off-field issues, you just want to watch the game for the game. That's great. But there are more and more things that go into it. And gambling, man, is not going away. It's always been here, and now it's out in the sunlight, and it's going to be anywhere. And that's going to include the state of Ohio in 2022. So at Cleveland.com and on our podcast, we're just going to find ways to talk about it in what is like an interesting, informational, hopefully more educated than, you know, 6-16-2 kind of way, without making the, you know, that's not the main thing we're going to do, but it's part of sports, man. And Tyler, you found a way. How did you sort of wind up doing this? That you, Tyler Shoemaker, father, husband of an investor, a simple man with simple dreams, sitting in an office with photos of his family behind him on the wall. How did you come up with the T-shoe system of football sports betting? Where did it come from?
A lot of trial and error. And I'm just really, really competitive. So, you know, when I first started just kind of recreationally betting in 2017, it was like, okay, kind of like you were saying, like, I don't want to just set my money on fire. So let me read about everything I can learn about this. And then just trial and error and different formulas and different, you know, I mean, there's just so many stats and so like, there's so much information, trying to just sift through it and put it in the right formula to be able to come up with a reasonable, accurate projection has really taken me a while to do, but I feel good about where I'm at now as far as the projection system. And I've actually expanded here in the last month or two. I'm now projecting college basketball and NBA games, and the projections have been excellent. Well above, profitable margin. For those that don't know, if you're assuming just the basic -110 odds, you need to be at 52.3% to break even. And all of my basketball numbers are 55% plus. So, and that's if I bet every single game that I, cause I project every single game and then, you know, pick which ones I like. So I'm now transitioning from football to basketball. So I'm hoping to be able to do this basically year round other than baseball season. Cause I don't touch baseball.
So I was talking the other day about how I dropped calculus in high school and I don't need no calculizing. Does that sound like I would be capable of coming up with a number system to win money on sports?
Yeah.
Can anybody do it? Or is the line like, you just got to be smarter than Doug, but anybody else could do it?
No, like if I really just explain to you the gist of how I come up with my projections, like it would sound so simple. Like, well, yeah, you idiot. Why didn't you think of that 4 years ago? But it definitely has taken me a long time to get to this point, but, yeah, no, you could figure it out. I'm confident.
All right. So I'm going to do, that's my off-season project. I probably should like write stories or, you know, do narrative podcasts. Instead, I'm going to come up with my own betting formula. So at least I'll have math behind my losing ways a year from now.
Yeah. Well, it seems so simple if I just gave you the answer, you'd be like, oh yeah, well that's, who wouldn't think of that? Like Ari the other day is telling me, oh, you know what? You should look into this. I'm like, all right, do you know how much time that would take to like, yes, that seems like a simple concept, but for me to comb through an entire season and try to pick out these things that you're talking about would take like months.
Yeah. Yeah. When I'm looking at you, you are not in a dark cave. You are in a house with windows and other people who live there. And this is not something that you do 20 hours a day. Okay. I like talking about this stuff on occasion with smart people, and you're my smart person, T-Shoe. So we appreciate you making time for Buckeye Talk. Again, everybody go follow Tyler on Twitter. Tyler, happy holidays, man. Good to talk to you.
Happy holidays to you.
Always good to have our guy T-Shoe back in here. We will be back next week. Our plan at the moment is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So 4 podcasts for you next week. We will record the Monday podcast on Monday. So we're giving this to you on Saturday as our 5th podcast this week. We'll record the Monday pod on Monday, so it won't be up right away Monday morning. But I know among the things we're planning next week, we'll do a rapid fire. We'll do some kind of Ohio State-Utah preview based on sort of watching some Utah games and that kind of thing before you get out to the Rose Bowl and start doing on-the-scene analyzing of things. And then we do want to do sort of a state of the program reset, and we'll send a bunch of questions out to our tech subscribers for that. So if you want to be part of that, good time to be a tech subscriber, 614-350-3315. We'll get you signed up for that for a 2-week free trial. For Tyler Shoemaker, I'm Doug Le Maurice, and that was Buckeye Talk.